that thrilling win on the Luka buzzer-beating three-pointer the other night. Joining us on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline, my long-time good friend and the radio play-by-play voice of the Mavericks, Chuck Cooperstein, who joins us now. Good morning. The first thing I got to ask you is, because you were a child of the 70s like I was, there was this big discussion because on one of the TVs, Bucky Godbolt always puts it on the Hallmark Channel in the morning, and the Waltons were on. And so the quick question was, how many kids did the Waltons have? Do you recall?
I never watched the Waltons, so I don't know. John Boy's the only one I remember. So, what, four? I don't know.
No, I guessed eight, and we were only able to count seven, because I said right off the top of my head, it was like John Boy, Mary Ellen, Jason, Ben, Jim Bob, Elizabeth, Aaron, and then I was trying to remember, and I couldn't remember them. But anyway, there was I think there's, you know, six, seven of them or something like that. I don't know. But what did you watch in the 70s, by the way, when you were 11, 12, 13, 14?
You know, I watched All the Family, the Jeffersons, Mary Tyler Moore. I watched Y5O, Ironside. FBI. With F. Assemblies Jr. Medical Center with Chad Everett. I love pretty much the same things I watch now.
You're right. Our buddy Alex tells me he believes, and see if you disagree or agree with this, that the greatest one-night lineup, better than the must-see NBC Thursday night lineup of the 90s, but the greatest one-night lineup was CBS 72-73 that had All in the Family, the Jeffersons, MASH, Bob Newhart, Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart, and Carol Burnett. One night.
There you go.
Yeah, that's good.
Undefeated, untied, and unscored upon.
True, pretty much. And while the Mavericks are not undefeated, untied, and unscored upon, they are 30-24, and they are in the sixth spot in the West right now, and they come off that exhilarating. I think I've known you long enough to know that you don't let anything bother you for very long. But how long did you beat yourself up over just not being able to tell for sure whether it was a two or a three and calling it a two the other night? I saw your tweet about that. I'm like, oh, you got to let that one go. Who knows in a bang-bang moment like that, right?
No, I mean, I'm still kind of I appreciate it, and I've had a lot of people reach out to me and say, don't beat yourself up over it. You know, this is the pandemic. This is what you get for calling it off the TV.
Yeah.
And it's all true, but you still want to get it right.
Yeah.
Because everything that we do, and regardless of pandemic or where we're doing it, we're reporting history. And you want to be a correct recorder of that history. And I just jumped the gun on it. I mean, that's obviously because I called it as a two, said we're going to overtime. Mark Bolliwell, who called it on TV, actually had the correct call because he said, hey, is it a two or a three? Because, there was no signal from the official, and there was nothing from the scorer's table initially. First they actually put it up that it was a two. But, the most ridiculous part of the whole thing was, who stumbles forward to the three-point line and has enough strength to get the ball in the basket that way? And that was why, just in my mind, watching it play out, that's got to be a two. I mean, there's no way anybody's making a three doing that. I mean, we've seen crazy three-pointers made, Damian Lillard against Paul George or over Chandler Parsons, and Dirk's had a couple that bounced around the rim and went in. But, Greg, I've been watching NBA ball for well over 50 years now, broadcasting it for 16. I have never seen a shot, a three-pointer like that, and certainly not one that won a game like that.
Well, while all that's true, you have also said on a couple of occasions, and I am definitely inclined to agree with you, that you've never seen a player quite like Luka, correct?
This is true, and as I tweeted, I said, I just – memo to self. He does things that mere mortal NBA players don't do.
No doubt about it. Chuck Cooperstein joining us here on Light the Tower on the Horn with Craig Way and Jeff Howe.
Coop, I know Luka's come out and had some things to say about the play-in scenario, not being a big fan of it. I know Mark Cuban has come out and said He's not a big fan of the whole setup this year with the play-in situation. Is that kind of a rallying point for the Mavericks right now? Because they're only a game back of Portland for that sixth spot. Is that the focus right now? Just do whatever it takes to start piling up wins and see if you can get that sixth spot?
Well, it has to be. I mean, you absolutely want to finish sixth. You don't want to play in a, you know, one and done or two and done situation. And you want the week off that goes with that by finishing sixth. Sorry about that. Somebody was trying to cut me off on Central Expressway. So, yeah, I mean, clearly it's a rallying cry. But I say clearly. I don't know that it's been a rallying cry for this team, given how they have elected to play the season. And, you know, talking about the schedule and what it is, you know, and you're still resting guys and doing this and doing that, you know, that's, they have the position that they are going to stick with, that they believe in, you know, of resting players.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you're Utah or Philadelphia or the Nets or whatever, you can rest players. But when you're the Mavericks or you're the Spurs or you're Portland for that matter, maybe even the Lakers for that matter, although it's hard to imagine with Davis coming back next week and LeBron probably coming back on May 1st that they'll rest anymore the rest of the year. I mean, when you're in that situation, I don't see how you rest players. I mean, I personally don't like the whole concept of what's gone down. I mean, I read it. I read what the science says, this, that, and the other. And yet I see guys like Harden and Westbrook, and certainly see guys who played in a much more physical era than what we have today in the NBA with much more difficult travel, and they didn't miss games. You know, that's just me. You know, would the Mavericks have taken this position if they were sitting in fourth place right now? Well, it probably wouldn't have been asked because it wouldn't have been an issue. But it clearly is an issue, and one that I understood last year, you know, given the bubble nature and whatever, and you know, and they had the proviso that you had to be within four games of eighth place in order to have a play-in game.
Right.
The fact that they've done it this year with 72 games, which is more than enough to determine, you know, who's good and who's not, who should be in the playoffs and who's not, and now you're adding games into the mix, and we know why they've done it. It's all for television, to give them the inventory, give them more money, and thus give the NBA more money that they're doing this. But is it a good thing? No, it's not a good thing. But, hey, it is what it is, and if you want to avoid it, well, there are ways to avoid it, like winning games.
Next chance for the Mavericks to do that is tonight against the New York Knicks, a team that Chuck Hooper's team grew up rooting for, but those were in the days of Willis Reed and Dave DeBuscher and Walt Clyde Frazier and Bill Bradley and Dick Barnett and several others, Earl the Pearl Monroe. Yeah, when there was
Worth of Dallas Madison.
Yes, absolutely. You know, so when it was fun to root for the Knicks. That said, here they are. They're in sixth place in the East. The Mavs are game out of sixth in the West. The Knicks are 29-27, and yet all of the conversation. This is one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on. I heard about this book that's come out about from a Knicks fan perspective, and that James Dolan yanked his season tickets because the guys yell at him, "Sell the team!" Like James Dolan never hears that. So, how about your thoughts on this Knicks team?
Well, Tom Thibodeau, first things first, has done a really good job. You know, they're a fantastic defensive team. They're third in defensive rating. They're first in points allowed, first in field goal defense, first in three-point defense. You know, they have an identity, and this has been the Thibodeau identity, you know, whether he's coached in Chicago or coached in Minnesota or when he was on Jeff Van Gundy's staff when the Knicks went to the finals, you know, in 1999. So I'm not surprised that they have adopted it. I am surprised, quite frankly, that Julius Randle has had the year that he's had. He's had an absolute outlier year for him, but hopefully now it's not an outlier. Hopefully this is who he is. Because if he is that player, then he's alone. Now, the Mavericks did a fantastic job against him 2 weeks ago. They held him to 5-20 shooting. Mavericks held the Knicks to 36% in that game. But, you know, look, I think Madison Square Garden is a special place to watch games, even if it's a very difficult place to actually work in, but nobody really cares about that. But with that venue involved in potential big games and or playoff games, this is a good thing for the NBA. And it's, you know, the fact that the Knicks seem to have a plan about how they're going about their business, as opposed to, well, where they've been basically since they went to the finals in 1999, is only a good thing.
Coop, when you look at the schedule, and I've heard a lot of people in this organization, from Rick Carlisle to Mark Cuban and everybody in between, talk about this team is going through that growth process. They're growing together. Is part of that growth process in turning the corner, winning games you need to win, that on paper you should win? And I'm not necessarily talking about the Knicks game, but you look at the upcoming schedule with the Kings and then the Pistons before you get those two with the Lakers. Are we hitting a little three-game stretch where the Mavs probably need all three of these if they're going to accelerate that growth process?
Well, I mean, I think it's that's kind of a macro look at it. Look, the Mavericks have the easiest schedule in the NBA, the easiest. Portland has the third most difficult schedule remaining in the NBA. And that's really all you need to look at. And if the Mavericks can't get past Portland with the schedule being what it is, then shame on them, because they certainly will have had the opportunity to do it. And especially when we get to May, and, you know, who knows what those games will look like in the last couple weeks in the season. But if you're and what those teams will look like. I mean, they've got two games with Cleveland. They got a game with Washington. The finale, they got Toronto. They got Minnesota. I mean, they got a lot of games against teams that are not going to care very much about what's going on. And if they can't win those games because, you know, they actually do care about playing them, then, you know, they'll deserve their fate of playing in the play-in.
Mavs and Knicks tonight. Hey, I appreciate you doing this. I know it's a busy Friday. Be careful in the murky, gloomy weather up there, because we've got murky, gloomy weather down here, and I was told it was kind of nasty up there as well. So hope things go well, and we'll get back in touch with you. I appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely, guys. Take care.
Bye, all right. Greg. That's Chuck Cooperstein, play-by-play voice of the Dallas Mavericks.